You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat, where baseball meets Broadway and sports meets show business. This is Al Malafronte coming at you tonight for the Broadway Podcast Network. Today's hitter has a career on stage that now spans more than 13 years. He made his big league debut playing for the storied Les Mis franchise before going on to play the title role in Shrek the Musical. He also co-starred in Big Fish on the 20th Century, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And back in 2018, he stepped into the title role of Phantom of the Opera, a role that he'll return to on October 22nd over at the Majestic Theater. In addition to all of his accomplishments on stage, he's also a tremendous sports fan, which is why I'm so excited he can join us tonight in the batter's box as we celebrate Broadway's triumphant return. So with that being said, I ask you all to please turn your attention to home plate, just beyond the marquee. Now batting, Ben Crawford. Ben, welcome.
Hey, hey, hey. How's it going? Thank you for having me out.
Dude, it is my absolute pleasure, bro. And I mean, you're rocking that epic Diamondbacks hat today. Like, you got the sick brim, the custom look over there. It's very nice to see.
Thank you. Thank you. I always got to rep my team, even if they're down in the dumps.
Boy. Well, it would have been great if they had a banner season in 2021, you know, since it's like the 20th anniversary of that 0-1 team. That would have just been so awesome.
I mean, that team was insane, and that would have been cool. But, you know, I love my D-backs, but they've got a business model that's, you know, sell when guys are really talented and then go get some prospects and hope that something hits. I don't know. I've seen it since the year we won that World Series, and they just gutted the team. But, you know, I'm not the one with the money making the decisions.
Now let me ask you, who did you root for before the Diamondbacks came to Arizona?
That's a great question. So we didn't have, obviously, Major League Baseball. We had minor league baseball, and in Tucson we had the Pacific Coast League, which I think is like now gone, but our team at the time was the Tucson Toros, who were really fun to watch, and they won the title one year, I remember growing up. But then what happened is the Colorado Rockies, Colorado got their expansion team, and then Colorado started doing their spring training at High Corbett Field in Tucson, where the Toros played. So then we started to get spring training baseball, and then I was a Rockies fan, and really like followed them. Like, I remember I had David Need was the big pitcher they got, and they had this like poster that was like the Need for Speed. And I remember having that poster in my room. Like, I think there was a lot of like Colorado Rockies fans down here. And then we got the D-backs, and that changed everything. Like, suddenly we had the Sidewinders, the Tucson Sidewinders. I think that the PCL league like went away or something, and the Toros became the Sidewinders. And then the Sidewinders were the minor league team for the D-backs. And so, I mean, 2-hour drive to your farm team, I think, was probably advantageous for a while. But now the whole thing's blown up. Now I think it's the Tucson Padres for San Diego, but it changes all the time now. It's like a grab bag out here. when it comes to minor league teams right now.
It's the same in New York, though. I mean, right now, one of the Yankees minor league affiliates, I mean, used to be one of the Red Sox affiliates, like the Trenton Thunder. They got rid of the Staten Island Yankees completely. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, they wiped away so many of these minor league teams. And now I think the AAA team is like we have the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Yankees, or it's like the Somerset Patriots. Now it's like it constantly changes, and it's so interesting the way, especially with like the way COVID hit everything, unfortunately. Like, I feel like you can't get too attached to these minor league teams, is what I'm saying, which is pretty sad.
You can't, and you know, it kind of stinks because it's been okay so far, but I found my favorite minor league team, which is one of the farm teams for the D-backs up in Hillsboro, Oregon. They're the Hillsboro Hops. Hillsboro, or Oregon, of course, is like has like the most breweries per capita. I think it's like Michigan and Oregon are tied, so there's a lot of beer up there. I love beer. So the Hillsboro Hops, and they're like the single A like winter league team. I can't remember exactly when they play, but they have like a short season, and like they are just crush it. They're very, very good. They're always competitive. And one of their former managers is a guy named Shelley Duncan, which you might be familiar with.
2007-2008 Yankee. That's right.
There you go. And I'm familiar with him because he went to University of Arizona, where I went to school, and he had the home run record when he was there. So it's this like crazy thing. Like, I found this team out there. Then I found they were connected to the D-backs. Then I found out Shelley Duncan had managed them. And I was just like, okay, this is my team. And the fun thing is, like, they have some really cool hats too. I wish I could find my favorite hat. I don't have it with me right now, but it's the PDX carpet from Portland Airport on the top of the hat, which is just like the coolest thing I ever thought there'd be on a hat. I don't know why I love airport carpet, but I just thought, how random and awesome is that? So that's another team I love, the Hillsboro Hops up in Hillsboro, Oregon.
That's really fun. You know, it's funny, my favorite minor league team, just from going to the games a lot as a kid, it's ironically the Mets affiliate, the Brooklyn Cyclones, who are still there.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, just, I mean, absolutely. It always helped for us that, you know, they have a Nathan's. They have like the original Nathan's right there in Coney Island. So, yeah. I mean, the whole experience of just going to the ballpark was awesome as a young kid. But absolutely. It's funny, the year they started, though, was in 2001, which is the same year that Arizona won the World Series. So I guess you would have been in college for that 01 team?
I was. I'm trying to think. I think I just started college, and of course that series was crazy. But I'll never. One of like the funniest moments for me is watching that final game, and then I was watching behind. I got to set the story. I was watching behind the couch like this. You know, Tony Womack was up to bat, and he hit. I think he hit a double like down the right side line, and I jumped up. And as I jumped up, I completely forgot that there was like a wooden like entryway, and I just went kadoosh like right into it, just like yucca, like just like boom boom, it was so fast. And then thankfully I was okay. But then I remember, you know, thankfully winning the game, and then trying to like going out with my buddy and trying to find World Series shirts like that night, and finding some at like a Walgreens, like at like midnight, they were like bringing them in. So it was an experience that, thankfully I remember after that hit to the head. So.
I was going to say, at least you weren't concussed by the time Luis Gonzalez came up, right?
Yes, I know. Right.
Oh my God.
Tell me what's happened. Oh yeah. Thankfully I watched it.
Against Mariano of all people, man. It's just, crazy.
It was, and that team, I mean, and I know that, you know, as a Yankee fan, that was such like a big team, and that was a big year for the country and for New York, obviously. There was just so much, you know, energy in that game. I just thought of like, that might be, if it's not the greatest, it's like one of the greatest World Series, like seven games, like, and there's like whoopings that went on, and like there was like games that weren't even close, and then like games that were really close that had everything. We had, you know, starters coming in to relieve. It was just like a great soap opera of a series, I thought.
You know, that's right, because game one, Arizona blew out the Yanks. It was like 9-1. Schilling pitched that great game, and then game six, they were smart, the Diamondbacks, because that game was 15-2 if you might remember. And Johnson was pitching a gem, but Bob Brenly had that wherewithal to take him out so he could save him to pitch in relief for game seven. Yeah. And look how that worked out. It was one of the most brilliant moves of the World Series.
It was, it just seemed like everyone had to be on their A game in those clutch moments. And even for the Yankees, they were too. I remember Brocious had just some insane hits. I think, what game was that? Was that game?
Game five.
Game five, where he just I remember just being like, God, can we get a break in this game? And it was just like, no, we're the Yankees, we're clutch. So just running all of the emotions during that series for sure.
The worst part of it was, for me anyway, I was in sixth grade during that series, and it was like almost every game that we won. Well, we won three of the games. The games three and game four were on school nights. So game three was obviously, I got to see, President Bush throw out the first pitch and everything, and Clemens pitched that great game, which was really cool. Yeah. And I remember game four was the night where we were behind 3-1 against Kim. And it was Halloween night. We had a school dance that night for Halloween, and then coming back and watching a little bit of the game, but I had school the next day, so I had to go to sleep. The Yankees are down 3-1. I wake up the next morning, hear all the crazy stuff about Tino and Jeter with the Mr. November home run. So it's like, unfortunately, I if I remember correctly, game five, I did get to watch because we didn't have school the next day or something like that. But I mainly saw the Diamondbacks routing the Yankees in that 15-2 game, which was on a Saturday night. So you could, I didn't even get to see the Mr. November home run because I was in sixth grade.
Man. It was, I said, that series just had so many ups and downs, and I don't think anyone knew who was going to win until the end. It was just, it was great baseball.
You're right. I do think it's the best World Series, at least in my lifetime. I wasn't alive for 1986. I wasn't alive for, 55 and all that stuff, but I think it's number one.
There's been it's definitely up there for sure.
Now, let me ask you, growing up, did you play sports and do theater simultaneously?
No, I was just a weird kid with a lot of energy. So I did sports, and I didn't really get into theater. I just was goofy, silly guy. And then I didn't really get into theater until literally high school, junior year. I was very musical. I come from a musical family. So I played trombone for since fifth grade, and was pretty good at it, and had done that, and did marching band. And then, junior year came along, and they had I got into choir, decided to do choir. And then we had the high school musical, and I did that. And I was I think I might like this more than band. And so I quit band my senior year and just did choir and theater. And so it happened later in life, but I've always had that weird, quirky energy that I guess helped me. I don't know.
I'm always curious about that though, because obviously, I'm not sure if it was like this in your house, but baseball gets passed on from a father to son quite often. So that baseball came first in my house, and then the theater came along a little bit later. I was in sixth grade when I was doing both simultaneously. With your buddies and stuff, did they get behind you, behind you leaving the ball field to go onto the stage?
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about my high school was there was a lot of people who were doing really busy kids who kept busy. I remember I was a three sport athlete for two of the 4 years, and I always had another activity, and a lot of my friends were doing the same things. So while we were in athletics, we were also you'd leave practice to go straight to marching band, or you'd go do that to go to rehearsal. And I mean, I think about that now, and I'm I just you're young, and I guess you just have unlimited energy, because I was just going nonstop. But I think it helped at my school that there was just people kind of did a bunch of stuff. So that was maybe a cool thing to do in a way. I don't know. Just based on how high school works sometimes, it might've been that definitely helped when you have other people doing it,
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And you know what? I think the game has changed a lot for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are more open-minded now compared to when you and I grew up. You know what I mean? So I think that those stigmas, I mean, that's a huge reason why we started Break a Bat. It's, to try to break the stigma that you can't sports and theater. Who the hell says you can't? I feel for a long time it was viewed as uncool. But nowadays I think people are a lot more open-minded, and just, it sounds like you grew up in a pretty cool pretty cool place in that sense where everyone was pretty understanding.
Yeah, I think I do think back and consider myself pretty fortunate to where I grew up in growing up in Tucson and going to a magnet school in middle school that really focused on like multicultural stuff, which at the time I didn't like realize that like having clubs for people to celebrate like their ethnicities and diversity, that really I think influenced me growing up a lot, especially growing up in Tucson. And I think it's something that like I carried with me and then going into high school too, it was just very, accepting. And I know that like, it wasn't perfect, but I know I felt like there was a lot of people doing a lot of different things and a lot of supportive families and people, involved in the area. And so, I mean, I think that just gives you like a stronger, I don't know, infrastructure of people that care about you and support you. So, I definitely benefited from that.
Now, these days, while you're, you know, performing in your Broadway shows, there have been a couple of years in which the Diamondbacks have been playing postseason games while you've been doing shows simultaneously. Do you have any good stories about, you know, having to go on stage on the night of a big playoff game and how you were trying to get your updates on what was happening with the game?
Well, the D-backs have had some, but, you know, I think the one that I've had most recently was I'm a Colts fan, an Indianapolis Colts fan as well, which is a whole thing with my dad loving Johnny Unitas and then following in my dad's footsteps. And now I just randomly work with the Indianapolis Symphony like all the time. So like they just, I've been a Colts fan since like middle school. So I am at the show. And if it's like a Saturday or a Sunday and there's a game on, like I will have it on my television. And I get loud sometimes. And so I've yelled a word that isn't good and someone will run in the dressing room, is everything okay? And I'm like, no, because they dropped the pass, you know, or whatever it is. So I have had a couple of those moments, you know, like I went to University of Arizona. So we've got football and football. Oh my God. We're not even going to talk about the football team, basketball, you know, the basketball team will play and people, it's just a different side of you. You know, when like your team is playing, a different side of you comes out and you're just like, I can't even with anyone else. Just stop it. Just go away. It's just like, and I'm working, but it's just, you get something and you're like, come on, baby. And they're like, what is happening? Like, I know, you know, I love the comment. I don't know about you, but like, you know, we have friends who aren't as into sports as us in like the theater world. And they'll say things like, you know, they can't hear you. And it's like, I know they can't hear me. It's not for them. It's for me. I need to feel like I'm connected to them. And somehow my energy is being sent to them via the neural pathways of life. I don't know. But they just don't understand. They don't get it.
Bro, my pet peeve is when I'm watching a big game and if I'm in like a big social gathering where there's people who aren't necessarily like big baseball fans, they don't understand. They start asking me a lot of questions at the wrong time, but they don't realize that they're doing it at the wrong time. Like they realize that they don't know that the base is loaded might not necessarily be the right time to ask me a certain question. You know what I mean? About what's going on in the game.
How does baseball work? And you're just like, what? He's like, what? Right now? No, I'm busy. I'm sorry. I remember one of my favorite is like watching the game and they'll be like, well, like, so what's going on? So then they're like, well, what's going on? And you're like, okay, so this is it. And then if they score a touchdown, then they win. And then they'll be like, so just score a touchdown. And I, that's what they're trying to do. But there's actually the same amount of guys trying to get them to not do it. So they're like, well, why don't they just score a touchdown? Like that's what they are. They're trying to, I promise.
Oh my God. Now you had mentioned to me that you picked up that sweet hat at Chase Field during the past year.
Yes. Went to a couple games. You know, one perk when your team isn't doing that great, ticket prices go down a little bit. They're a little easier to score. So went and saw a couple games and yeah, I mean, it's baseball. It's like, you know, I think baseball is maybe the one that I love to always, like, if you have a choice, I would always, like, I want to go to the baseball game. I just want to sit there and, like, be in, like, it really is like Americana. It is like a part of America, I think, more than the other games just because it was, like, made here. I think there's something about that. But yeah, it's just like, it was especially it was great because, you know, there wasn't a lot of people going, so you could kind of, you were spaced out and you were able to enjoy the game, and it was fun.
Now, has it been tough for you to stay atop your game on the performing front, you know, throughout this crazy past year and a half?
I mean, in some senses, yeah, because we haven't had, you know, the opportunities. So if you think of it like as an athlete, if an athlete can't play, you know, they have to find other ways to like keep themselves in shape. And so there is some of, you know, waiting around and being like, okay, now we got to start to get the, you know, engine up and running again and things like that. So, yeah, I think during all this, like being self-sufficient was really important. And so making sure, you know, taking care of yourself and taking care of your voice and making sure it's ready to go when we come back in, which is, you know, pretty soon now. So there is definitely a part like an athlete, like keeping everything primed and ready.
So the Electric Pandemic album, for example, that was you taking your cuts in the cage, because it came out pretty good. I mean, if you want to talk about home runs on the performing front, I thought that came out pretty nicely.
well, thank you. Yeah, Electronic Pandemic was this idea of like sitting around, like trying to feel like wanting to be self-sufficient and realizing like maybe I should do like a little album or something, and calling up my buddy, Ryan Scott Oliver, who's a fantastic composer, and just kind of being like, can we make an EP? And him going, yeah, let's figure something out. So he got me in touch, with this awesome arranger composer named John Coyne, and he and I worked together and took like four Broadway classic songs and kind of flipped them on their end a bit. And, the fun thing about it, the crazy thing about it was that I was in Arizona recording in my closet in my apartment. And then all of the musicians were recording in their apartments as well. And then we sent everything over to the great Dean Chernow, who mixed it all. And, it's really cool to kind of think we were all in different places, like creating this music. And then it came together, and I'm really proud of it. It's really awesome.
And you have a Christmas album in the works as well now, right? Something to look forward to this holiday season?
I do. Yeah, we just started work on a Christmas album. It'll be four awesome holiday songs flipped on their end a little bit and, you know, help spread the Christmas cheer ring in the new year.
Now, how do you go about picking your favorite Christmas songs to cover? Because there's so many, man. It's like if people ask me my favorite Christmas song, I have to give off like a top 10 list. How'd you narrow it down?
Well, I think one thing that actually helps with like narrowing stuff down when it comes to picking songs for albums and things like that is you kind of like, it'd be like picking a team. Like you're not going to have a team with like all shortstops. Like you need guys who are good at like every position. So when I was picking songs for Electronic Pandemic, it was like, okay, like what are the feelings that we get from each song? What is like the vibe, the groove? We wanted to do like four things that were like really different, but also could stand on their own. And so I think like looking for Christmas songs, that was like the same thing, finding those songs that are like what I always look for when I'm doing stuff is maybe you won't like love everything, but there's going to be something that you really love and you'll like everything. So it's like, there's something for everybody. So once you start to kind of look at it, like finding things that are versatile that everyone can enjoy, and then you pick a song, you're like, okay, that song is like, that crosses off these songs because they're similar. And then you just kind of using that, you fill out your lineup.
Yeah. Oh, well, touche. You got your combo of lefties, righties, power hitters, contact hitters. Yeah. Nice balance.
Absolutely.
The occasional switch hitter. That's awesome.
Exactly.
Oh man. So you ready to get back on stage at the Majestic in a couple of weeks?
Absolutely. It's been far too long, as everyone knows. We're starting up here real soon, getting into rehearsals. It'll be interesting because it's been a while. It really feels like instead of putting the same show back up, I think we're putting up a new show in some ways. So I'm interested to see how that energy like affects everything, and it'll obviously be in a positive way. So I'm just excited to see how that works and, you know, get back into like the swing of things, which is just crazy to think about because it's just been the absolute opposite of that for so long, but very excited.
Now, compared to some of the other roles that you've taken on, you know, you talked a little bit about your background in theater and being kind of late to the game. Did you ever envision yourself in the Andrew Lloyd Webber franchise in such a big way, taking on arguably the most iconic role in his whole catalog?
No. You know, it was one of those things, oh, that'd be neat to do, but never like really thinking that it would happen. And then actually, like when the audition first came along, I was just finishing Charlie and I hadn't seen my daughter in a little bit. And I was like, I want to go back and, you know, I want to see her. And then talking to friends were like, yeah, I know you want to do that, but, you know, think about what that could mean for her future if you did this. And, you know, it was good. I got some great perspective from some friends to, you know, that hard thing as a parent sometimes, where sometimes we just want to like sit there and like be with our kids and like, you know, love them and hug them. And of course that's like awesome. And I would love to do that all the time. But then, you know, there's also that part of setting a great example and going out and working hard and, you know, providing for them. And, it really helped, like just having like supportive friends to help me make that decision, even though I missed her like crazy. So went in and auditioned and, was so fortunate to be able to get the role. And, yeah, it's still very surreal for me to, you know, be able to get to say that I have played this part and I get to play it again. It's pretty cool.
Now in your mind, how's it going to be different as far as your performance when you go back on in 2021 compared to when you left the show in 2020? Like, do you have different ideas for where you're going to take the character, for example?
Yes and no. I think one of the cool things, one of the things I love about what we do is the collaborative effort. I definitely think that we'll all have, like, obviously have new stuff to bring to our parts with everything we've gone through in the past year and a half. But I don't know how I'll be affected by that, but I'm very open to it. And one of the things that I love is when we originally were working on the role of the Phantom, when I was coming into the show, was the opportunity for discussion and like character analysis, and then how that goes into like each scene and how each scene builds upon the character throughout the story. So it's seeing how that will be changed by everything that everyone has gone through, I think will be create for interesting and provocative theater.
Yeah. You know, just to use a little baseball parallel here for a moment. I mean, I mentioned your resume when we did the intro. What was more pressure for you? You know, being a young kid coming up through the minor league system and, you know, in a relatively short period of time, finding success in a show like Shrek, for example, when you're taking on like a major franchise character like that at a young age, or being an established veteran with high expectations to take on a role like Phantom, like what's more pressure for you as a player?
I mean, I think the, you know, it's that quote from Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility kind of thing. And like the more you climb up the ladder, the higher you climb up the career ladder, it's just more is expected. And so I think it's more difficult, but it's more rewarding. You know, it's that double-edged sword of, you know, you want to work hard and you want to be the best. Well, then there's sacrifices you have to make to do that. It's people don't just like wake up one day and like get things handed to them. That's so incredibly rare. It takes sacrifice, and working hard to build yourself up in one area can sacrifice in others. And that's just for everything, you know? So it's requires that mindset and that preparation to be able to lay down the effort and also find a balance with life, so that you can be at that level but also have time for family and have time for friends, and like you need to also have some time for you as well. So it's a whole process, I think, that you refine as you get older and become more experienced and have more responsibility.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Now, you mentioned your daughter. I take it that she's very young. Does she get what you do? And like, how does she react when she comes see you perform on Broadway?
Well, so I have two kids. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. My 4-year-old is Charlotte, and then my son is 2. He's Jack. And Jack wasn't around when Daddy got Phantom, but they're really funny. I did this this concert out of town, and they would send me videos during the day, you know, because they were like, they didn't really know what Daddy did. Because like Charlotte, before the pandemic, Charlotte had come to work with me, but she was like so little. She didn't know what was going on. So they still don't really know, but I can't wait for them. They'll come out and like see the show. And I don't know if Jack will come see it, but I think we'll have Charlotte come. I think she's old enough. And if not, we'll just sit in the back and whisk her out if she gets bored. So, I mean, we'll have like all those options for her. But the funny thing is like, I still don't know if she knows what I do. I think she thinks that I put on costumes because we'll go online and like show her pictures of me. And she's like, Daddy's wearing costumes. And you're like, well, yes, he is. But Daddy gets paid to put those on. I'm not just like putting on costumes and then putting pictures on the internet to show you, honey. This was actually an organized photo shoot for a Broadway show. But she's 4. So, I mean, that's all I can expect. But it is funny to like show her videos. Oh, this is Daddy singing. And she's like, what is he doing? Okay, all right. My favorite story is when she was really little, she came to the dressing room. And I put on my Phantom mask just like over my face. And I don't know if it was just like the contrast of like the white mask with my face. She just started to like shake and was like very scared all of a sudden. Like, why is Daddy's face gone? And I was like, it's okay. I take it off. It's okay. You know? And then I take the Red Death skull mask because I know my daughter. I'm like, let me just try something. And I put the skull mask. It's like a full skull with a jaw thing down here. So when I go like that, the jaw moves. And I put it on. I'm like, hi, Charlotte. How are you? And she just loves it. She's clapping. Like, That's my daughter. So that's my favorite story about her coming to the dressing room. And then you like try it on and all that. And she's so funny. She's like, you put the scary mask on. I don't want it on, though.
That's amazing. Too bad you don't get to bring those props home with you. I'm sure that you guys, you know, with a little bit of extra free time together, you could have, you know, tried out quite a few characters on her.
Absolutely. We got some sweet dinosaur masks at home that really help with storytelling and being a raptor or a T-Rex. We've got some good costume pieces at home that she likes to use when she wants to be a dinosaur. So
I love that. That is so cool, Ben. And listen, man, you've accomplished quite a bit in your career, but we do this little segment here on Break a Bat. I know you might not have had too much exposure to Aroldis Chapman being a fan of a team that plays in the National League West, but I take it you know who the fastest throwing man ever is, right?
I've heard of the man, yes.
Yeah, so Chapman, fastest throwing man ever. We do a little segment here in his honor that actually celebrates whoever our guest is. We call it Fastball Derby, where I want you to picture yourself in the batter's box, me on the mound as Chapman throwing 105 miles an hour. I'm going to ask you a question, and you got to think quick because the ball's coming fast. You tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. How does that sound?
All right, let's do it.
All right, favorite New York City meal.
Oh, sweetness. I would say, God. All right. Five. I guess like it's right nearby the theater. I love it. 5 napkin burger, turkey burger, 5 napkin style.
Thing you miss most about Arizona?
Oh, the desert.
January in Arizona, basically, compared to what we get.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. January in Arizona, fire going in the fireplace, doors wide open. That's the coolest thing.
Coolest piece of memorabilia that you've kept from one of your Broadway performances?
Oh, yeah. I took the hands from Shrek. The gloves from Shrek and had them forever. I still have them somewhere. But my favorite was I would put them on they lived on this lamp in my room, and I would go out of town and I'd come back and they'd be different. And I'd be able to go to my roommate and I'd be like, hey, dude, did you use my Shrek hands? He's like, oh, yeah, we put them on at a party. And we were all like drinking. I was like, that's the That's the coolest one. Yeah, I'm sure there's like many pictures of like just like middle fingers with that somewhere.
Universal must love that. Oh man. Okay, your beer of choice while you're watching a game.
I love Brooklyn Brewery. I love KCBC. I'm not picky. I just want a good solid beer in my hand.
All-time favorite Diamondback.
I think I got Randy Johnson.
Safe answer.
That's my answer. That's
a good answer. Good. I should say safe and good. Like, it's not like you know, you didn't say like, I mean, you could have very well gone like a junior Spivey or like Danny Bautista, like someone random like that.
Like, you could have gone like Craig Council.
Yeah. That's another good choice. Hey, very successful manager now, actually, Craig Council.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maddox.
he's killing it. Favorite cast album?
Blah, 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 blah. God, I suck at this. I would say Spelling Bee. I love Spelling Bee.
Person in the audience you were most nervous or intimidated to perform in front of?
I have to say, no comment.
No comment. There's not. Yeah.
Why, there is a person. We're not going to get into it.
Was there an incident that happened with this?
No, there's just a person that I don't want to talk about. That would be that person.
Okay. Fair enough. Check the swing, folks.
Check swing.
Favorite holiday tradition?
Thanksgiving and watching football and eating food.
Most embarrassing onstage moment?
I split my pants all the time. They get split all the time. All the time. three days, I believe, into my Broadway debut at Les Mis, they split. I think they've split in every show. I think I've even split the fake pants in Shrek that I wore for the costume. But they split a lot in Phantom because... of what they're made out of. And then we get to the final layer and it's really humid and they stick to my legs. And so when I squat down to talk to Christine, when she's on the ground, they just blow up. And it's been bad. It's been so bad that I'm like, are they still around my ankles? Do I still have pants? Like the inverse of like a tearaway, like a basketball player wears, but like, I feel every part of the breeze now. Like it has been, and so then I'm just doing the whole scene like not showing my back at all to the audience. This happens multiple times. And it's been so bad. I've like bowed and lifted the tails of my jacket and the cast is behind me as I bow and they're all like, oh, my pants split all the time.
And despite the repetition of this happening, it still embarrasses you, huh?
I guess it doesn't anymore, but God, it did for a while. But then it's like I have the best dresser. He double stitches everything. It's just like, it happens. If it's not like if it's happening every show, it'd be like, what the heck? But it's like you get to like a humid day and there I am in the layer and I can feel it. But I can't be like this during the show. You know, I can't be like touching on my pants during the layer. So you kind of feel, you're like, oh, they're not sliding down like they're supposed to. And then I go down to do it and you just hear, bah! Like that's the sound you hear. It just goes, bah! And I know that just everything from north to south is just, bah! So...
All right, favorite late night snack. Two show day, you get home from the Majestic, it's after midnight. What do you grab before you hit the couch and turn on the Diamondbacks game?
If I'm trying to be healthy, it's going to be like hummus and celery or something like that. But if it's been a long week, it's probably a pint of Ben and Jerry's.
That sounds, on a Saturday night, that honestly sounds like kind of epic, right?
Yeah, there's been some like pints and then like a cheese platter. You know, those long weeks, you're like, mm-mm. Daddy deserves all of the food groups.
Proudest moment of your career?
Playing Phantom, working hard. It signifies so much hard work. And I'm just so honored and fortunate. And I think there's a thing about working hard and reaching levels that you dreamed you could, that you just appreciate so much. And I'm so grateful and blessed to be here. And so playing Phantom is just such an honor. It's definitely at the top of the list.
And lastly, what's the best piece of advice anyone ever gave you?
Work hard, because when you think you've worked your hardest, someone else is working harder than you. Just never stop working hard.
Well, you've certainly worked very hard in your career, Ben. And man, I'm so stoked to see you back on stage. I don't know if you knew this. The last show I saw before COVID hit, late February 2020, was you and Phantom. And
oh, man,
it's I'm so looking forward to getting to see you back on stage, man. It's going to be such a great, great fall here on Broadway. And you're going to be a huge part of it, man.
We're all so excited. Please, everyone, come out, see a show, support Broadway. We're ready for you guys. We're so happy to be here, and we just want everyone to come back and escape with us and have a great time.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And for the folks at home who may want to connect with you on social media and get more information on your Christmas album once it's released, where can they find more info on that?
You can go to ben-crawford.com. That's my website. It's got all kinds of news on it. Right now, there's a link to it. You can hit up Electronic Pandemic on all your streaming platforms. And you can follow me on Instagram as well, crawdaddy21, crawdaddy21. And yeah, I'll post stuff there too.
What's the origin of Crawdaddy, by the way? Is that your nickname?
Yeah, so in high school, my nickname was Crawdaddy. And then for people like way back when we had AOL and we had AIM names, so my family, we had AIM, and my name was Crawdaddy, C-R-A-W-D-A-D-D-Y. But then we switched from AOL to CompuServe. And when we switched, I couldn't get the D-A-D-D-Y because AOL and CompuServe were still merged at the time. So I was like, I just have to do one D. And then that just kind of stuck. And then I added 21. So it was Crawdaddy 21. And 21 is a big number. Everyone, you know, blackjack, blah, blah, blah. But then my grandma and I were playing cards one day, and she was counting out. She was like 18, 19, 20, 21. Like, she just like fucking sang 21. And I was like, what? And so it became this like thing. Like, for 30 years, it's been a thing in the family. So Crawdaddy 21, that's where it's from. Weird family. Love them to death.
Freaking love it, bro. That is awesome. Man, I cannot thank you enough for joining us on the show today. This was a blast, man.
My pleasure, Al. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Of course. And thanks to all the folks who listened at home today to Break a Bat. Be sure to subscribe to Break a Bat wherever you get your podcasts. I'm so glad you could be with us today. This is Al Malafronte signing off for the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.